You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. We at New Dimensions thank you for your support. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Our guest today asked the question, how do we find the strength to not look away from all that is breaking our hearts? And in her most recent book, she looks at the elements of erosion. Erosion that is shaping the physical landscape of our nation due to climate change. She is also examining erosion we face in democracy, science, compassion, and trust. She reminds us that love and beauty is felt in the chaos, in the heartbreak, and in the intimacy of family. She also reminds us that water can crack stone. And that's what we'll be exploring today, how to be soft, yielding, and a relentless presence that will crack the stone of prevailing institutions that put profits above preservation of our public lands and the open space of democracy, with our guest, Terry Tempest Williams. Terry Tempest Williams is a naturalist, essayist, and a staunch defender of the environment. Her work is widely taught and anthologized around the world. A member of the American Academy of Arts and Letters, she currently is the writer-in-residence at Harvard Divinity School and divides her time between Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Castle Valley, Utah. She's the award-winning author of many books, including The Hour of Land, A Personal Topography of America's National Parks, Refuge, and a Natural History of Family and Place, Finding Beauty in a Broken World, When Women Were Birds, and Erosion, Essays of Undoing. Join us for the next hour as we explore the essence of erosion and evolution with our guest, Terry Tempest Williams. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Terry, welcome.
I am so thrilled to be here, Justine. As I said to you, for me, a book is not a book until it's in your hands.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I've just been immersed. I feel like I've been having a long visit with you now, and now here you are in person. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, you reside in my heart, and I don't think you'll mind if I share this with the listeners. I mean, the gift you gave me coming in of this exquisite owl shawl, I feel like I'm wrapped in feathers, and it's your embrace. Thank you so much.
Well, we've taken a picture, and our listeners will have to see it. So you look so gorgeous, wrapped in your one of your favorite birds.
Well, I think when you say, you know, how do we find the strength to not look away from all that is breaking our hearts? It's so clear to me that it's about community, and you are at the heart of mine. So thank you for this embrace, and this moment that we can share the things that matter to us.
Well, it's my honor, truly. Last time we were together, I looked it up. It was right after all the tribes came together with the government in an extraordinary moment of agreement between like various native tribes and the government and everybody. It was just a huge endeavor to look at Bear's Ears as a national monument. And later that year, we were together in June that year when that happened. And later that year, Obama was president.
Yes.
In December, he wrote it out as a designation of a national monument. And I was clapping. I know you were clapping. We were just feeling so full.
It was a historic moment. And as you say, the Hopi, the Diné, Navajo, Zuni, Mountain Ute, Ouray Ute, five tribes in the Four Corners area said these lands, Bear's Ears, are a sacred gathering place. It is where the bones of our ancestors are buried. They said this is where our ceremonies are held, where our medicines are found. When on any given day they would tell us, you can hear the voices of our ancestors on the wind. And on that day, as you remind us, you know, December 28th, 2016, President Obama heard their pleas and through the 1906 Antiquities Act established the Bear's Ears National Monument, 1.3 million acres of high desert terrain, red rock canyons, pinyon, juniper forests, and these two beautiful buttes known as Bear's Ears, raised up toward the sky. It was a handshake across history. It was a newfound trust between the tribes and the federal government. It was a commitment made that traditional knowledge would be interwoven with the science of the federal agencies, such as the Bureau of Land Management, the National Park Service, the National Forest Service. It was revelatory, and there was celebration all around. There were also people that felt betrayed, what I call the Frontier Mormons in San Juan County, and senators like Orrin Hatch. And they didn't forget what happened with Grand Staircase Escalante in 1996, nor were they content with letting this stand. And Orrin Hatch immediately, with Donald Trump, put forth the idea that you can undo this. And you'll remember that Secretary Zinke said in April of 2017.
He was appointed the
Secretary of Interior.
Yes.
They did a study based on President Trump's recommendation, which came from Orrin Hatch, that any national monument that had been established from 1996 to the present that was over 100,000 acres had to be reviewed. In the end, it was bookended by Grand Staircase Escalante in 1996, and Bear's Ears National Monument in 2016. And on December 4th, we will never forget that Donald Trump came to Utah for 2 hours, had never set foot on these lands, had no interest in these lands, only as real estate, and gutted Bear's Ears National Monument by 85% and Grand Staircase Escalante by 50%. And it is now in the courts. The tribes are continuing their advocacy. The elders are in ceremony, and management plans are under discussion with some dispute. So we'll see what happens. But meanwhile, Justine, these lands are now open for business, and we are watching the continuation of fossil fuel development, of the re-engagement of uranium mines that have affected tens of thousands of Native families and Anglos alike, with rates of cancer that are astonishing, fouling the water still. This is ongoing.
And I think you also mentioned, I wasn't sure if I remember if it was Utah or Wyoming, which is one of the largest coal-producing places in the world.
Yeah, if Wyoming were a nation, it would be ranked fifth as the largest coal-producing
And we think of, in the U.S., we think of Appalachia as the coal mining. But
and this is in the world.
Yeah. And that's in the world.
And yet, you know, they know, having lived in Wyoming, you know, there's great discussion that this is a dying industry, that they have got to seek other means of energy, whether it's solar or wind in a state like Wyoming. So we're in transition. But the fossil fuel industry is not going out without a last desperate, devastating gasp.
Well, you know, I'm reminded of that park game at an amusement park game called Whack-A-Mole. That you win over here and then it pops up over there. And so going back to our original question, how do we keep ourselves open and in hope and active in the face of these devastating actions?
My mantra continues to be engagement is a prayer. And, you know, the last 10 years really working closely with tribal members, especially in an organization called Utah Dene Bikaya. That's what they continue to teach us. And I see how hard they're working. I see what they're doing in their own communities. I see the power of the women. I see what the elders and the medicine people are doing and the youth. And, you know, we see what our youth are doing around this country, around the world in terms of climate justice. You know, this is not a time... I mean, we all experience despair. There's no question. I mean, there are times, I will be honest, where I wonder if I can get up in the morning. But in those moments, I'm aware of the limits of my own imagination. And imagination shared create collaboration, and collaboration builds community. And in community, I believe anything is possible. Even a community of two. You know, I think that's what a marriage is. That's what a friendship is. But I see the power of communities all over the world and the engagement as a prayer, and that things are shifting just at the same time when we wonder if collapse is imminent. You know, look at our democracy right now. We're in the throes of impeachment with a president who not only is above the law, but disregards the law. On the other hand, you know, I think there's great participation and awareness happening. So it's, I think that's part of what I was trying to embrace and look at with erosion. Erosion in the land and erosion of democracy, of decency, and of compassion, of science, of all of these things.
I think you point out in erosion, let's say, of the land, it reveals something.
It's so beautiful. I mean, yeah. I live in an erosional landscape, and I'm so aware that what is whittled, weathered, and worn away is as beautiful as what remains. You know, I remember, Justine, when Brooke and I went to the Grand Canyon. I'd never been.
Let's stop right there for just a moment. And
yes.
We're on the edge of the Grand Canyon, and we'll come back to that. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Terry Tempest Williams, and she is the author of Erosion, Essays of Undoing. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, coyoteclan.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Terry Tempest Williams, and she is the author of Erosion, Essays of Undoing. And we're just talking about you and your husband, Brooke, are right visiting the Grand Canyon for the first time. You had not
seen
it.
Well, he was appalled that I had never seen it. You know, I got married at 19, Justine. It gets younger and younger as I get older and older. But, you know, I grew up in a family who made their living on the land, laying oil and gas pipe, water lines, sewage lines, so forth. And my father felt the land, it all looked the same. And so why would you go to the Grand Canyon when this is all around us? So when Brooke found out I'd never seen it, he just went, well, this is not acceptable. So we went to the North Rim. He blindfolded me, led me out to the edge, took off the blindfold, and I could not believe what was before me. And I looked at him and I said, why didn't someone tell me about the Grand Canyon? And he goes, Terry, you know, I think people have talked about the Grand Canyon before. But what I really meant was, it wasn't what remained that moved me. It was everything that had been carried away.
Yes.
Through wind, water, and time, and the mighty Colorado River. And I think erosion can be a beautiful thing. And one of the things I love about the definition of erosion, which is what is whittled, worn, and weathered away is as beautiful as what remains, is it's associated with movement. Weathering is the taking away, but erosion creates motion. So particles are carried by the wind. You know, sediments are flowing down river. Why the Colorado River runs red in the spring. And I feel that the erosion we're experiencing in this country, the erosion of democracy, decency, the erosion of science, the erosion of truth, something is being created as a movement. And I think the pendulum will swing back. I really believe that we as a people will demand that climate change is real.
Don't you feel that it's...
And to act accordingly,
and
I should say.
Of course, and act accordingly. And don't you feel that it's a... We notice it better if we notice it together.
It's beautiful.
There's something about standing with others. And
they, not just those who agree with us.
Oh, you know, I think that's tough.
That's one of the things where, you know, we see the left, we see the right, neither side are listening. I look at our own dinner table, you know, around Thanksgiving and the holidays. But what does it mean to really listen to one another? And where is the agreement point? And I really believe there is one. What is the line that binds us together rather than tears us apart? And that's what I'm interested in. And most often, Justine, I find that through story, that if we really listen to what one's origin stories are or where one comes from, or, you know, the house you showed me before we started speaking on the air, you know, what brings us together as women who were raised in Alabama and Utah. You know, to me, that's the beginning point, and that's what I'm interested in. And living in rural Utah, you know, with neighbors that where we don't see eye to eye politically, we do share a love of the land.
You did, when you were teaching at some point, you developed a course that was called Weather Reports.
Yes.
Tell us about that project and what it revealed.
That was at the University of Wyoming in the Creative Writing Program. And my students, I was there for a year, and my students wanted to write outside the classroom. They wanted to go out into the landscape that they were part of. And it was their idea that we do weather reports where we identify seven communities that are affected by energy, by coal, by coal bed methane development, by oil and gas, whether it's in the Wind Rivers in towns like Pinedale, or coal bed methane, which is in the Powder River Basin, or coal in a town like Gillette, or where the financial basis is in a town like Casper, or on Indian lands in Laramie. And that's what we did. And it was It was a form that we used on Friday night. We would go to a neutral space, usually a library or a community center. The student would give a reading. I would introduce the students. We created a circle, and community members would share stories, opening with the question, what keeps you up at night? There was one moment, and sometimes it went until midnight. I remember in Pinedale, Wyoming, when the librarian at the very end, it was 12:30 in the morning, she said, you know, sometimes I wake up and I think Wyoming will just be one big hole of excavation. But there was a moment in Casper, Wyoming, and a man walked in, large man, dressed in a suit, a belt buckle the size of a dinner plate, with an oil rig. It was the state senator, Kit Jennings, very powerful. Everyone knew he was in the pockets of the Coalbed Methane Company. He sat down. Each person spoke of their name, spoke about what kept them up at night, what were their concerns, what the weather was. And when the microphone reached him, he said, what keeps me up at night is dippy-hippy gatherings like this. And then he might as well have had a shotgun pointed at me. And said very vile things, that I didn't belong there, that I should go back home where I belonged, et cetera, et cetera. And we all just listened to him. And then he started criticizing the students, and they listened to him. And then he realized there was not going to be a confrontation, but we were listening. And then he said, after all his vitriol, I was just a kid that was viewed as white trash. And then he told his story of alienation and how no one paid attention to him, of what it meant to grow up white and poor in the outback of Wyoming. And he became real, not in anyone's pocket, but the presence of story. And he stayed the whole night, and we had dinner after. That's what I'm talking about. And I've not shared this publicly, but what was interesting is that when he was up for election, and believe me, I was no fan of his politically, but personally, I appreciated him. And I recognized him as a member of my own family who was also in the extractive industry. And the head of one of the leaders of the Democratic Party in Wyoming said, we know you have that tape of Kit Jennings firing at you and the students. And we know of the lies that he told that night. We know you have that on tape. Can we have the tape? Because that will defeat him. And the students and I said no. That was in the privacy of story and sacred space. And we didn't give it to them. They were very upset. But I think that's where my loyalties lie. You know, what do we share as human beings that bypasses rhetoric and pierces the heart and reminds us what binds us together? And that's where I think we really need to cultivate spaces where that can occur.
Well, I think that that's just so powerful. And that is one of, when you're doing circle like that, it is a sacred place. And things do not leave, go outside that circle. You know, that we don't use it to the detriment of anyone in that circle.
Right.
And that's, I guess you would say, bad karma.
Well, you know, and that's what was so powerful about what the students did, is that they did get the weather reports, which were community reports.
And I know that you talk, I think it was in Casper, you also went to, like, that's where there are all these bars in Casper, and you talked to these young men who were working the rigs. And
that was actually in Riverton.
Oh, Riverton, right.
And it was amazing because there were the white bars and then there were the Indian bars. And the students, we went to both. And two very, very different worlds. But in both cases, life was expendable for different reasons. And again, you know, this is where empathy occurs. Again, stories were told. And, you know, what's a life worth on the rig? $10,000. When someone like Colton Bryant, that Alexander Fuller wrote about, he was early 20s, was killed. The head of the company showed up in the hospital before he died and gave the family a check for $10,000.
And that's what it was worth.
It's amazing. And talk about environmental injustice. You know, in Utah, you look at the expense of lives in terms of the uranium mines and the tens of thousands of uranium workers that are dead or dying now of cancer. And that this administration wants to ignite that industry again.
And I know another thing that's really important to you is the night sky and all of this extractive kind of activity is well lit, and it's like these big cities in the middle of this wilderness.
Yeah.
And it just obscures.
Whether it's on the base of the Wind Rivers in Wyoming or on the edge of Hovenweep National Monument in southern Utah, it's a very different landscape. And, you know, if a raven's point of view matters to us, what would be seen is a system of roads and frack lines and flares at night, and during the day it looks like an exposed nervous system.
Terry, why does wilderness matter? I mean, all right, so somebody who lives in the city might say, well, okay, though I live with roads and lights and everything, why not you? Why does wilderness matter?
It's a great question, Justine. And, you know, what we have to say is, and that is so important to remember, is, you know, before there were public lands, and now we have 640 million acres of public lands in the public trust that belong to all American citizens. But before there were public lands, they were tribal lands. But what I'm seeing now is Native people, Indigenous people in this country, alongside conservationists, alongside rural communities, alongside lawmakers, are saying our public lands, wildlands, national parks, monuments, national forests, all of these natural areas on, you know, many of them adjacent to tribal lands, it is imperative that they be protected because of the carbon that they hold. So that...
Now that's like very practical.
Very practical. Over half of our carbon emissions come from public lands, federal lands. And if we continue drilling at the rate we are drilling now with this excess, then, you know, carbon emissions are just going to keep rising.
So we'll talk about that in a moment. I'm here with Terry Tempest Williams, and she is the author of Erosion, Essays of Undoing. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, coyoteclan.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Terry Tempest Williams, and she is the author of Erosion, Essays of Undoing. Terry, there are some bright spots. I want to mention one that you go into length. This is a wonderful person, Willie Gray Eyes. Mm. And we're talking about a rural part of Utah. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Utah. And he ran